you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast featuring Phil Perry. It is free agent week, and we got plenty to plow into. We got Juju analysis. Is Tyquan Thornton your field stretcher? Offensive line pickups, will they be enough? And spending. Let's put that whole conversation front and center that we so often hear. Is Bill not spending because Bill isn't a great GM, or is Bill not spending because Robert Kraft tells him not to? Or is he really not spending at all? This guy who threw $172 million in guarantees around just 2 years ago. We'll dive into that because it's a recurring theme I hear on multiple radio stations and media outlets. All that and more on. I haven't done this in a while. Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast featuring Phil Perry. Phil, I haven't done that in a while. The rundown at the beginning.
I liked it. Felt like home. It felt like home.
Feel organized?
I missed the first word. Did it feel organized?
Yeah,
it did. It felt organized. Felt like you're ready to attack the podcast. Your hair doesn't look like it's ready to attack the podcast, but your words sound like they're ready to attack the podcast.
Well, I hopped out of the shower. I took a shower at 2:30 Eastern, and I got out, and I didn't have time to put product in, so it's still a little bit askew. I'm not a big product guy anyway, but I see what you're saying. So those of you who are only listening, you're being spared some porcupineal glimpses of my dome. Let's get right into Juju Smith-Schuster. What's the good of it? Talk to me about that. Why is this a good signing?
So, number one, he's really good after the catch. Next Gen Stats has him as a top five guy in the NFL last year in terms of yards after the catch over expected, Tom. Mm. And I think that last point is important. That means you're getting more than the average receiver would in a similar situation. Just raw yards after catch numbers are sometimes a little misleading because if you catch it at the line of scrimmage and you pick up 5 yards, that's not a great pass play, but it's a pretty good yards after catch number. So anyway, he is good after the catch.
Interject real quick. He had 465 of those yards last year, not over expected, but the total yards after the catch, 465. By contrast, Jacoby Myers had around 260, I think, or so. Jacoby caught it maybe a yard or so deeper. Back to
he was fifth in the NFL. Debo Samuel, who in my opinion is the best in the league with the ball in his hands at the receiver position, was fourth. So that's a real strength of Juju Smith-Schuster's game. It's something that he brings to the field that Jacoby Myers does not in the same way. I would also say that I think Juju Smith-Schuster, especially relative to Myers, and I think that's fair to talk about these guys and compare and contrast, is because that's the role that Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be going into. They're both big slots.
We'll dive into more on that comparison, but go ahead.
I think he's probably a little stronger, Tom. Yeah. So he's a little heavier guy. I don't want to take anything away from Myers as a blocker because I think he was really good, and the league thinks he was really good in that regard. But Myers may be able to do a little bit more for you there. I think that's probably why the yards after catch are a little bit better with him. I think he's just a more powerful player. So that to me is the good with this signing.
And I think if you watch clips of Juju Smith-Schuster, it really comes clean, especially from last year in Kansas City. He's just a huge guy. You don't see very many wide receivers who are even shaped like him. I don't know if he looked faster when he was in Pittsburgh. He doesn't look like a guy who's running a 4.56 right now. He does not look appreciably quicker or faster than Jacoby Myers. But the point remains, he had those yards after the catch. How much, though, Phil, has Juju Smith-Schuster profited from being with Ben Roethlisberger and having Antonio Brown on the other side and then being with Patrick Mahomes, who can restart plays and extend them to the point where guys end up with the kind of separation that allows you to be in a big cavern and run for several yards or have less attention on him because Andy Reid's offense makes you not know whether to shit or go blind.
That would be the real question for me. We haven't seen him in a scenario where he's the big name receiver in a group or big name pass catcher in a group on an offense. And so I don't know how that's going to work here in New England. Again, two future Hall of Fame quarterbacks, a really good offensive scheme last year in Kansas City, the best offense in football, lots of opportunities to make lots of big plays. And he wasn't really a big play guy, Tom. I mean, I think because of his strength and because neither guy is really top end fast, and because he's going to break more tackles than Myers, I think the potential for more explosive plays is there with Smith-Schuster. But when you look at it last year, Myers had 14 catches that went for 20 yards or more, and Juju Smith-Schuster, with a lot more opportunities, that offense ran a lot more plays than the Patriots did. He had 9. So, like, in terms of explosiveness, you really, in my opinion, you're not upgrading here.
When you mentioned upgrading, when we look at the Patriots going outside their system to find players, inject them, bring them into Foxborough and get more than they're getting out of guys that they have developed, they've not done well. So we can go back all the way to, you know, the 2000s with, who was that guy who couldn't run the right routes? Donald Hayes. But let's stay a little more current. Mohamed Sanu.
Joey Galloway, Perry, right?
Joey Galloway. It's just innumerable players.
It's not that hard. It's not that hard.
2009, that would be Tommy in New York. Well, so while in that game, Julian Edelman in his first start in the NFL because Wes Welker was hurt as a rookie, Julian Edelman was catching 8 for 96. And the converted quarterback, Julian Edelman, turned into one of the best players that the Patriots ever had at wide receiver. And Jacoby Myers, a converted quarterback, was turning into one of the best players. Yet instead of going with someone they developed, they've gone outside the yard and brought in somebody, despite the fact that when they bring people in and project them as to how they'll look in their offense, whether it's tight ends like Jonnu Smith, Asiasi, Dalton Keene, or Scott Chandler, to throw him in there for the hell of it, or whether it's wide receivers like Sanu or Hooks, who I thought was pretty good, but they didn't love either. He produces, and they get rid of him too. Anyway, why Juju not Myers if you had to penetrate Bill Belichick's brain?
So this is interesting to me because I was really digging when we initially found out about the Smith-Schuster finding, both, you know, with the numbers that we have and the research that we can do on our own, but also just, you know, trying to talk to people in the building and find out and around the league and find out what their opinions were of these two players. And the word that I got back on Smith-Schuster that I thought was telling yesterday was he was the alternative. And alternative screamed to me, meaning like, well, the first guy walked out the door. We didn't want to meet his price for the first guy. And there was door number two. and that was our other option. And Tom, the thing that makes that make more sense today is he was cheaper. In terms of practical guarantees, yes. Jacoby Myers got more money. His contract is better than the one, in my opinion, is better than the one Smith-Schuster got. So that makes it make more sense.
Let me get right into that contract because the numbers have come out. And here's the difference. Mike Florio had the numbers from Smith-Schuster. It basically breaks down to, it's not 3 and 33. What the Patriots are definitely on the hook for is 2 and 16.
Correct.
2 years, $16 million. What the Raiders are on the hook for is, in essence, 1 and 11. So the Patriots have to pay $8 million a year for 2 years of Juju Smith-Schuster's service. The Raiders are down for 1 year and $11 million for also a 3 and 33 broadcasting contract.
And
in either event.
Can I just add one
just
thing?
Just in either event, it was 2 and 22 for Nelson Aguilar, so they're saving on both guys. Go ahead, Phil.
Well, that's a fair point. I didn't even think about Nelson Aguilar in the last 24 hours, but when you factor him into the equation, it just makes you shake your head. I would say the practical guarantees on Myers' deal are better. So you're right. The fully guaranteed money is 1 year and 10 and a half or 11 for Jacoby Myers. and it's 16 over 2 years for Smith-Schuster. Well, the only way that Jakobi Meyers doesn't get to year two of his contract is if he has some sort of catastrophic injury, which obviously there's the possibility of that, or he just so completely falls off a cliff that they don't want him around next year at a pretty reasonable number.
What's the number next year? Is it seven or something? Seven and a half.
Well, so if he's on the roster, basically call it the first week of the league year next year, I think it's a 10 and a half more million is guaranteed just like that. Doesn't have to play a single snap. So his practical guarantees, right? In all likelihood, he's going to be on the roster to start next year. If he gets there, that's 2 years. And I think it's 2 and 21.
Okay.
So it's 2 and 21 versus 2 and 16. If you
so
know,
so for $3 million a year less, the Patriots, who took a flamethrower to $10 million guaranteed money to Isaiah Wynn last year. But for 2 years, $3 million each year, the Patriots are saying, we'd rather have Smith-Schuster than Jakobi Meyers. Or correct, more specifically, we don't want to spend $11 million a year on Jakobi Meyers. Sorry. Is this loving Juju more or being out on Jakobi Meyers' talent level and asking price?
I think it's probably the first one. And then you feel okay about the fact that you are essentially looking at Smith-Schuster and saying, we are okay with taking on the risk that he just doesn't work in our building, in our system, in our offense, with our quarterback, all those intangible things that are hard to predict anytime somebody changes teams. They're okay taking on that risk for $6 million total over 2 years less.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like that, I think that's the equation. Well, yeah, we like Jakobi, but at, you know, 11 per, that's just, we're going to draw our line in the sand here and we're going to say, no, we can get Juju for how much less? And it's about $3 million per year less. That sounds about right. Those guys are pretty similar players. We know it. We're not guaranteed that it's going to work, but we're okay with that because we're paying less money. I think that's probably how they looked at it.
Just feels like they're nickel and diming all over the place on some things. Whereas again, we've seen them be economically ridiculous at other junctures. And we're going to get much more into that because this really speaks to what I think is a completely Bill Belichick led move to count every penny to be as economically sound and responsible as can be. Yet we so often hear, well, why doesn't Kraft spend? Why doesn't Kraft spend? Do you think Kraft is actually sitting there weighing in on the relative merits of Juju Smith-Schuster at 2 and 16 as relates to Jakobi Meyers at 2 and 22? No, absolutely friggin' not. He's divested himself of that. The big ones are going to go to Robert, but the smaller ones are going to go to Bill. So when we ascribe so much frugality that the Patriots exhibit to Robert Kraft, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll get back to it. I don't think enough lands at the feet of Bill Belichick, the economics major from Wesleyan, who in so many ways was appealing to be hired in the first place by Bill Belichick because of his economic soundness. There's a side angle, though, to Juju Smith-Schuster and Bill Belichick's attraction to him. And it actually dates back to 2018. 2017, Juju comes into the league as a second-round pick, Southern California, USC. But right before the Patriots played the Steelers on December 15th, 2018, it was a great game. I think it was the Jesse James game. I might be wrong. It might have been the year before. No, it wasn't the Jesse James game. This is the game the Patriots lost when Brady turtled a little bit on his throw to the end zone for Gronk.
Yes, in Pittsburgh, right?
And dropped him to 9-5. But before that game, Belichick talked about Antonio Brown, who was in his last season there, and Juju Smith-Schuster, and said, these two receivers are elite, elite, elite. At the time, Juju had 91 catches for 1,234. AB had 86 for 1,063 and 12 touchdown catches. And Belichick said, you're not going to get anybody better than these two guys, plus the quarterback. They got a lot of other guys too, but I mean, these two receivers are elite, elite, elite. Of Juju, he said, he's a dynamic player, tremendous player, great with the ball in his hands, great hands, makes some spectacular catches, hard to tackle, so he's very good. After the game, Belichick approached Juju. They had a little conversation afterwards. Juju tweeted about Bill Belichick sought me out and talked about how great it was. And ironically enough, by the end of that year, as part of Antonio Brown's exodus from Pittsburgh, one of the things that pissed him off most at the Steelers, and his teammates there was that Juju Smith-Schuster was named the Steelers MVP. They make a big deal of it there, and that's voted on by the teammates. And AB started taking pot shots at Juju, and Juju started taking pot shots back on social media. And that went on for months, really, into April, which ultimately, and ironically enough, led to AB going to Oakland and then getting his feet frozen off and landing in New England and then, you know, self-immolating here. But it's really interesting that Bill watched all this shit from afar with Juju going on, and he's going to sign both of the protagonists in that idiotic Twitter fight from after the 2018 season. It's just so ridiculous. I just wanted to throw that whole scenario out there.
Isn't that amazing too? Because you would look at that and say, you know, if it were any other coach, right? Say it was Andy Reid and the Chiefs. He would say, well, hey, that's what Andy Reid does. Talent is talent, and talent trumps all, and he'll bring in anybody. It doesn't matter. Could be a TikTok star. Could be a guy who's had legal problems. Doesn't matter. Do we ever say that about Bill Belichick? We never say that about Bill Belichick.
Yeah, but he zigs it often enough so that when we don't say it and he does it, he gets to seem like Mysterio. Well, Beal's being enigmatic. He doesn't want any attention, but he just signed Tim Tebow. Oh, he just signed Albert Haynesworth. Well, there's Corey Dillon. What about Chad Ochocinco? Bill, you're zigging when everyone thought you were going to zag. You're nuts again.
You're right. So, like, I don't know. I guess he's just so hard to peg. You're right. He's an elusive man when it comes to trying to wrestle his philosophy to the ground. Here it is. It's what's best for the team, right? So there are some years where you need that infusion of talent. I would say this is one of those years, and where he's gotten a guy who I think has a big name. He's not a big talent anymore.
No.
He was in 2018. Yet, Tom, I think that's what they need. They need an infusion of talent. Like they need air to breathe, and they're not doing it. So I know we're going to focus on Juju in the receiver spot. But, you know, tackle, they need talent. Corner, they need talent. These are the biggest, most important positions that decide who wins and loses in the NFL. And they are devoid of top-end talent.
And it's blood from a stone in some ways. We're going to get to that too. But just I want to ask you about one player that we're overlooking as we continue to pine for talent and talk about the Jerry Judys and the DeAndre Hopkins. Are we ignoring the Tyquan Thornton, a second-round pick last year, who was absolutely brilliant at times during training camp? And he showed the ability to make acrobatic catches and be more than a Bethel Johnson straight line burner. Could he be the under the radar, 180 pound, willowy, wispy, 6'1 guy who can catch it short and go along like Devontae Smith or Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb? Are we ignoring the possibility, not the possibility that he can do that, perhaps the possibility that the Patriots might see him as that?
Good question. Those are two different things, right?
Yes.
You know, if he actually can do it and whether or not they're projecting him in that way. I don't think they're listen, I'm not saying that they're saying they know he can't do it. What I would say is, based on things that I've heard, I don't think they're assuming he will be that guy, right? I don't think they're banking on a Devontae Smith, Jerry Jeudy type of emergence from their second round pick last year. Does it mean he can't do it? No, because I mean, the speed is there. And Tom, in a scheme where you're going to have a coach now who understands, okay, how can we create some space for this guy? This guy seems like somebody who could really put stress on a defense if he's just given a little bit of space, because he's so dynamic. He's so fast and he can get to that speed pretty quickly. Let's figure out how to use this guy. So, you know, maybe there's a smidgen of hope that he can be that. But if you're going into the year assuming he's going to be that, that's when I would say that's probably not the safest bet, because we just haven't seen it consistently enough from him, right?
Right. We're looking at the Patriots wide receiver group, and we've got guys like Dan Orlovsky, who after Jacoby Myers was lost to the Raiders, made a comment that's hard to argue with. Patriots are probably one of the lowest they're among the bottom five in the league in terms of skill positions, but they're still not paying their players at the skill positions like that. Hunter Henry is a top of the market tight end. Devontae Parker makes about $5 million. I would imagine, I'd have to check, but he made six last year. I would imagine that Kendrick Bourne is over six this year. Might be seven if I remember right. Juju's going to make basically eight, 2 and 16. Yeah, so around eight if you take cap hits. And Tyquan Thornton. Are the Patriots conceivably looking at this group, Phil, if they go draft another guy and say, we got enough guys to catch balls. We don't have to worry about, even though we made those phone calls, we don't have to worry about Hopkins or Judy or anybody else. They want to fall out of the sky to us, fine, but we're good.
I think there is a very real possibility that that's the case.
70% likelihood?
Well, here's what I would say. Knowing Bill Belichick the way we do, could you not see him saying, well, okay, we've got how many receivers on the field at one time, Tom? Yeah, usually three, right? Sometimes four, but very rarely four, usually three. Well, we've got four that we think can start. We've got an X in Parker. We've got a Z in Bourne. We've got another guy who could do probably both those things in Thornton. And we've got a slot in Juju Smith-Schuster. If you're just looking at their depth chart and their top 11 guys on offense, the way Bill Belichick probably is looking at it in his office, the slots are filled. They could play tomorrow with the guys they have right now. I think what he would do is say, well, we're not going to extend for anybody that's out there because it's not a great free agent class, but we have this whole thing called the draft, Tom, right? So we got the draft and, you know, so we'll look at the draft. And maybe we'll take a tackle in the first round, but you know, maybe we won't. Maybe there's a receiver there that we like. This is a loaded tight end class. Maybe we'll draft a tight end really high and we'll become a 12 personnel team the way that I always like to. And then, you know, how many receivers we need on the field when we go 12 personnel?
Two.
Only two. Well, only two. Four. We got four. So I could totally, especially with the tight end class being deep the way it is this year, with a lot of guys that he would like, guys that block, you know, so not your... I'm not ruling out a Mike Gesicki addition here, but if you add Mike Gesicki to Hunter Henry, you've kind of got the Spider-Man meme going on, like two guys pointing at each other, like pretty good athletes that aren't moving people in the run game. You got some guys that can move some people at tight end this year in the draft, and it wouldn't stun me if he's earmarked a second round pick for that position and just say that's who we're going to be this year. Bill O'Brien's done pretty well with 12 personnel in the past. I think you guys probably remember that.
What are the odds that Kendrick Bourne gets dealt? I'd say higher than 10%.
Did me just over exaggerating the amount of depth that the depth of the receiver group encourage you to trade Kendrick Bourne just now?
Well, I mean, when you present it that way, if it's two or three receivers on the field and you have Tyquan Thornton, Devontae Parker, and Smith-Schuster and Hunter Henry. And you have a guy who was a pain in your ass last year to a large extent, and he couldn't line up right, and he's kind of expensive. I'm not saying trade him and don't replace him, but he is an asset to somebody, i.e. the Raiders, I think, would love him, and I think that Kendrick Bourne would love to go to the Raiders. But let's table that discussion on Kendrick Bourne. But I do think if you look at their entire roster of players, he shines out like a, you know, sore thumb, sticks out like a sore thumb as a player who you could conceivably trade because he's got use elsewhere and he might be a smidge redundant here. Fair?
Certainly fair. And if we see Jacoby and then Kendrick moved out, like, I don't know, should we anticipate anybody that said anything that ran a little sideways of the offensive operation last year? Should we just anticipate that those guys are gone this offseason?
Well, see, Felger said that yesterday, and he said, you know, the gang of five guys who were lippy, and it was Mack and Bourne and Myers and David Andrews and somebody else he mentioned. I can't remember who. But I'm like, Jacoby Myers wouldn't say shit if he had a mouthful. He barely said anything out of line. I just don't understand how Jacoby Myers would stand up to scrutiny as somebody who was a pain in the ass to Bill Belichick or Matt Patricia or Joe Judge. I just don't see that.
I don't think he was antagonistic. The one comment that I can remember was early in the season before the Steelers game where he was in a scrum with Giardi and I think Soucy and maybe a couple of others. And he said something along the lines of, yeah, it's kind of hard to tell, you know, why we're calling things when we're calling them sometimes, but you know, we just kind of roll with it. It's similar to some of the things we heard from Mac.
Yeah.
You know, and Kendrick Bourne, you know, obviously ran afoul of the coaching staff during the season. So David Andrews, I can't really remember having too much negative to say about the offense.
I can't remember what it was.
He's a pretty strong program guy. I'm not sure that's somebody that you want out the door.
No, but you know, so was McCourty, and McCourty looks at the situation. I talked to him at length on Wednesday, and McCourty's like, what are we doing with, you're not only losing production, you're losing leadership. There's really nobody in that wide receiver room who you can point to and say, do it like that. Jacoby was that player. So it's been mystifying, I think. And if the teammates are mystified more so than the media, if the teammates are mystified at the amount that it would have taken to retain him and what they perceive to be losing on the field and in the locker room, then it carries a hell of a lot more weight than us flapping our arms about it. And again, my arms flapping has receded since the Patriots basically replaced him with, again, the Spider-Man meme pointing at each other. But it still just doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense, except for, okay, they save some money. Speaking not of saving money, but of further personnel moves, the Patriots have already thrown a bunch of bodies at the offensive line. Riley Reiff, the latest tackle to be signed. Calvin Anderson, another tackle signed. Yannick Adjust was tendered. He'll be sticking around at right tackle. And, of course, Connor McDermott, another right tackle. All of them join Trent Brown, who was your incumbent left tackle. Reiff's contract, $5 million with a $2.7 million signing. He's got a total of $4.15 in guarantees. So you'd have that hit your cap if you cut the 34-year-old Reiff. All that from Doug Kide, who I believe works for something called A to Z Sports now, formerly of The Athletic and Nesson. So good work on that, Dougie. Appreciate you. Is it Riley Reiff and Trent Brown right now, Phil? It's your tackle spot?
Oh, looks. That's how it looks. And if you actually look at their contracts for this season, right? Trent Brown signed a 2-year deal last year. But if you look at the amount of money that Trent Brown is set to pull in for 2023, $3 million of his $4 million is fully guaranteed. Trent's is. He's got about 88,000 per game in roster bonuses, which is twice what Riley Reiff has. But you put it all together, you know, Trent Brown has a chance to, with some like significant incentives in there too. If he makes a Pro Bowl, he gets a significant amount of money. He has a chance to make $11 million. Riley Reiff, if you include his incentives, again, he's got some significant incentives in there too. It looks like up to $4 million in playing time incentives. He could make up to $9 million. To me, that's not all that different. If you're looking at the fully guaranteed money, you know, it's 4.15 for Riley Reiff. It's going to end up being in the same range so long as he hits his weight bone. Like, you know, he's going to end up pulling in about the same amount guaranteed. It just tells me they view Riley Reiff as a potential starter at tackle for them. I don't think it rules out that they take one in the first round. I actually would look at this, Tom, and say, okay, it's a 1-year deal for Riley Reiff. Pretty similar to back in 2011 when they had Matt Light, who was at the end of his career as the veteran sage presence, and they drafted Nate Solder in the first round, even though they already had two starters already on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And Light was going to usher in the new kid, and the new kid was going to be ready to go by year two. That's sort of what it looks like with Riley Reiff and Trent Brown. And then, you know, Riley Reiff can kind of usher along whoever's next because he's such a great personality and he's a great character guy and he's great in the room and he's a good, smart veteran. That's sort of what this is shaping up like for me.
The young guy's not on the roster yet. So it has
the young guy would be the first round pick. Yeah.
Okay. Let's get back to that spending. And here's Bill Belichick at the end of the season. He referenced, kind of unprompted a little bit, the spending that his team has engaged in over the last few years and says, hey, I've been pretty economically sound.
Our spending in 2020, our spending in 2021, and our spending in 2022, the aggregate of that was we were 27th in the league in cash spending. Over a three-year period, we're one of the lowest spending teams in the league.
Phil, what was he driving at there? Was Bill Belichick saying, hey, I'm fundamentally sound when it comes to economics, I'm not a spendthrift out here? Or was he insinuating that his hands are tied a little bit and the purse strings are not as loose as you think? I still don't understand what he meant. And I think that some important people within the team are still mystified as exactly what Bill was driving at.
I can't imagine. And I feel like we said this at the time.
Yeah.
I can't imagine he's calling out ownership when he's getting paid $20 million a year or more. Probably more. It's Tom, for our listenership, as opposed to our viewership, our listenership, Tom was just pointing to the sky when I said 20 million. So more than 20 million. And he's going to say that he doesn't get the resources he needs to add talent to his team. He's just going to come right out the day after the season's ended without a playoff berth. And he's going to say that to us. I highly, highly doubt that.
Agreed.
I think for some reason, this is a badge of honor for Bill Belichick. I think it's part of his, what he deems to be his value to his team and to his owners. I can get blood from a stone. I can make sure that we're not, you know, just throwing bags of money left and right and just hoping that something sticks somewhere. No, we're going to be smart about this. We're going to have a plan. And that's fine. And that's good. I just think it's hard to do when your team doesn't have a lot of talent.
I want to circle back on the motivation at that time, though. Think about it. It's the end of the season. Jonnu Smith just had another 28-catch season. Nelson Agholor caught like 11 balls, whatever, more than that. Isaiah Wynn finished the year someplace in the wilds of America. I have no idea. Between them, over the course of the two previous years, they had collected nearly $60 million from the Patriots, those three players. So I think that the potential was there for anybody, myself included, because I have those numbers right at the top of my head to say, Bill's not getting the most bang for his buck. So the defense to that is to say, okay, you think I'm, not that he's specifically saying it to me, but heading off at the pass, anybody who would be critical of the lack of production they got from some of their better players, because you can turn around and look, yeah, well, Jonnu didn't do shit, but look what Jacoby Myers did. Or look what Ramondre Stevenson did, or look how Mike Onwenu looks at right guard. So all those things could be conceivable as well. So I wonder if that was Bill's motivation, is like, hey, look, I know you guys are going to bring up the $172 million in guaranteed money that I had Robert Wright checks on in 2021, more than he spent on the entire team when he purchased it. But I'm not a maniac. Still, I continue to hear, and we have a Boston Sports Tonight email thread on this particular Thursday. And, you know, I'm talking about the spending and Mike Felger, who has covered the team almost as long as I did from 98 on, knows the history. He ascribes so much of the Patriots' failure to spend or go headlong into free agency or make sexy moves. He does not want Robert Kraft to skate. And if you listen to 98.5, whether it's Mike, whether it's Tony Maz, whether it's Murray, whether it's, and it happens on EEI too. I just think that Kraft is too often unfairly maligned for not spending when he just, all he did was happen to hire a guy who was economically tight as a friggin' drum anyway. I don't think it's Robert Kraft sitting in on these friggin' meetings. I don't think it was Robert Kraft who said to Tom Brady, we're not re-signing you to a two-year, $50 million deal. That was Bill wanted to go year to year. Kraft was dying to keep Tom Brady around, but he deferred to Bill, who Bill said, nope, not here, not on my money, which is Robert's money, not on our money. So what? Why do we continue to circle back to say, hey, it's Kraft building a lighthouse? Or am I naive?
I don't think you're naive. No, because I would agree with you on this front. You know, I think there are, obviously, there have to be, right, certain situations where the owner gets involved. Big, gigantic, guaranteed money contracts, quarterbacks or otherwise. Usually, I think it's quarterbacks, right? You know, that is something where I would anticipate an owner would at least be in on the conversation. But I think Robert Kraft has, he's been pretty clear about this. And if it wasn't working this way, he would open himself up to more criticism, and he would open himself up to not being able to hold his head coach accountable. If he's there making decisions for Bill Belichick and they have losing season after losing season, then it's on him, right? That it is on him. And I think he wants the head coach to be accountable because he wants to give it to the football expert. And then at the end of the year, say, okay, well, where are we right now? And I think especially this offseason, Tom, I think Robert Kraft is dying to have a competitive football team. I think he really wants to be in the playoffs. He's made that very clear. He made it clear last year, and then they went and they had the season they had this past season. To get there, I think they've got to be really aggressive. And they're not. They're not being really aggressive.
This is a different conversation, but I will say this. You can't just do foot fires in the driveway. You have to have somebody across from you to defend or attack or do something with. You can't get blood from a stone. There's nobody out there that is splash worthy at this moment.
Oh, but they could have got a starting tackle.
Okay.
And they could have got a start.
They got Riley Reiff.
You could have got the best corner, best man-to-man corner on the market in Jamel Dean, very reasonable cost. The tackles, by the way, also extremely reasonable, including Orlando Brown. I don't want to get too sidetracked here, but that was a guy that people in the league thought was going to get $20 million a year or more. He ends up getting 16. That's a completely reasonable price for a starting tackle in today's game.
What are we seeing in this offseason? Are we seeing collusion? Are we just seeing a depressed group of free agents that people are looking at the film on and going, no effing way?
I think it's probably the latter.
I think
there's just a lack of talent.
Jacoby Myers and Juju Smith-Schuster, they're looking at him and going, are you shitting me? $15 million for these guys just because everybody does. That's what we're supposed to because we did it last year. No flipping way. So that's what I mean with, I get you with the aggression and the Mike McGlinchey and being better than Riley Reiff. But I wonder.
I'm just saying, Tom. I think he would be happy to spend some money if it meant his team would be relevant. They are on track. It's early. It's March 16th. It's 3:48 p.m. They may trade for a big name receiver and trade for a starting cornerback in the next 5 minutes. But as we sit here right now, they are not a better roster than they were a year ago. And for a coach who has made it very clear players win games, coaches lose them, to have your biggest offseason acquisition be a coach and Bill O'Brien, I think it's fair to say that will help, but that can't be it if you want to get to where your owner wants to get to.
Go back to the notion of cash spending, which Felger so frequently brings up. You know, the Patriots, we spent on the cap, but then they refer back to cash spending. I think that, that's a great banner to wave, but if you tap someone on the shoulder who's waving that and say, you know why they're kind of low in cash spending? Well, for the last three seasons, they've been paying one quarterback, Cam Newton, like $5 million or less. And then you had a rookie quarterback on his rookie contract for 2 years. Your right guard has been Mike Onwenu. Your center's been an undrafted guy from Georgia that you never had to break the bank on. You franchise Joe Tooney, then he got the hell out of town. So you go on replacement level there. Your best and most productive wideout was an undrafted guy out of, South Carolina. The reason in some regards that the Patriots have low cash spending, I think, with some contracts, is it's cyclical. They weren't that low on cash spending, I think, when Stephon Gilmore and Devin McCourty were patrolling the secondary. Or Malcolm Butler was still on the team and whatever number he was making, $3 million in 2016-17. But the point remains that if you're Robert Kraft, the remembrance of what happened when he tried to move the team to South Boston and build a downtown stadium may not be foremost in people's minds. People might forget that in doing that, there was very much, at least in the perception of the Krafts, and maybe greater than that, a very anti-Semitic vibe to that. Maybe that's just the Kraft felt that way unfairly, and that's besmirching anyone who was in Southie, around Southie, or anywhere in the state legislature or local legislature who was against the craft. The bottom line is, cheap is a loaded word when directed at the crafts. For an organization that built a stadium in Foxborough and didn't take really any public money but $72 million, has no PSLs, and has put together an organization that's won 6 Super Bowls and gone to 9, I think using that loaded word in a reflexive way is unfair to the guy. When you know how shitty it makes him feel, when you know how loaded that word is, and when the evidence just doesn't add up, you have the highest paid coach in professional sports. Yeah, okay. Gillette Stadium's a little run down and it finished shitty on the NFLPA numbers. And you got a lot of players who are standing up and going, what? It's because half the guys Bill drafts are from Alabama. It's coming from the friggin' Taj Mahal of all football facilities. Phil, I tag out. What do you got?
I'm fixated on how you sort of started that statement, where you were kind of rattling off all of these guys that are their best players or playing important roles that don't make a lot of money. And I just come back to, I think Bill Belichick views spending a lot of money as not the right way to build a team.
Weak.
Yes.
Well, Trent Brown, even use Trent Brown. You get him for a 7th rounder from San Francisco. He turns around. He turns himself into the most highly paid offensive lineman in the league. He shits himself out in Las Vegas. He has to come back, and now you get him on a cut rate. That's a dream come true for Bill.
And so, but when you combine that, like this confluence of things that have happened, so you have that philosophy of, well, spending, first of all, the numbers show that your return on investment is X, and that's not good enough. That's not what we want. That's not sustainable. You also, there are some intangible things that happen when you pay a player. Maybe you don't get the same effort out of the guy. Maybe you don't get the same level of commitment, the same motivation. You know, these are things that might be swimming around in Bill Belichick's head when it comes to certain decisions. But then you combine that with not drafting well, and you get a cheap team that is also not very good. And that's kind of, you know, and because of, I think in large part, this is a credit to him. I think in part because they have a good coach, and they've had good defenses, I should say, the last couple of years. They're still able to, on a roster that might be bottom 5 in the league, as Dan Orlovsky says, and I would agree with him, when it comes to skill position talent, they can still win 8 games. There's not many teams that could probably do that. Cam Newton's quarterback, and they win 7 games. How many times did you say that, Tom? If there's anybody else in charge of the thing, they probably win 4, right? So it's the philosophy combined with the poor performance in the draft room that I think have led to where we've gotten. I don't think it's a reluctance to spend money on Robert Kraft's part, because we saw just a couple off seasons ago, they'll spend some money. I just think the head coach looks at that and says, we can't be doing that every other year, because that's not how you build a good team.
So all that said, the Patriots have, you know, I'm not down to the penny here, but with the signings they've made, probably about $25 million of cap space remaining. I wonder if this would be a great time to take a run at Mike Onwenu and Kyle Duggar and say, fellas, let's get you guys extended right now. We're not doing anything more in free agency. We're going to keep the guys who are good, keep them around. Thoughts and prayers, Phil.
You would think that, but wouldn't you have done that with Jacoby Myers?
Yeah, but Jacoby Myers was not one of the best at his position.
Fair. Okay, that's fair.
On one who might be, Duggar at least is a second round pick trending towards that.
That's fair.
One of the better in the league.
Yeah.
What would you say if the Patriots picked up Juju Smith-Schuster, threw 3 fatties at right tackle, re-signed Jonathan Jones, Jabril Peppers, and who else did they re-sign over there? Be that as it may.
Raekwon McMillan and Mac Wilson?
Yeah, I like Raekwon McMillan. And extended Duggar and Onwenu. Pretty good heading into the draft?
Not
good enough, says
no,
Phil.
No, you're the same team. That's the thing. You're the same team with a better offensive coordinator who I think, and we've used this word before, but like he is a force multiplier, in my opinion. The entire offense will get better because Bill O'Brien's around.
I love when Phil says force multiplier.
I'm not sure that's enough to be a good team, you know, especially in your division, which is looking like it could be one of the most competitive in football.
All right. Well, we'll see what else the Patriots have up their sleeves. We've been babbling for about an hour. We covered a lot of ground. I think this was a really good pod in my estimation. And John Henry, the skull crusher, he likes to get a hold of this thing. We've been doing it later in the day. So he needs to turn this biatch around. Everybody, we appreciate your time.